We believe that being a defender requires more than building shooting skills on a range. It's also a development of the heart, mind, body, and spirit. Join us as we explore what it truly means to be a defender in your training and in your everyday life. Welcome to Defenders Live. Thank you for joining Defenders Live. I'm Laura Thorson from Defenders USA, and I'm so glad that you are hanging out with me again tonight. Thank you for attending, and thank you for shouting out where everybody is from. I love hearing from you guys. We love all the cool engagement in the comments. We have a really awesome guest tonight I'm looking forward to introducing you to. So we've got Adam Winch here, the founder of Defenders USA. Guys, if you don't know anything about Defenders USA, about me or Adam Winch, go to defenders-usa.com. You can learn everything you need to know about all the other instructors with Defenders, about Defenders mission, et cetera, et cetera. So I encourage you to go there. All right. So if we do have questions during this live, we will do a Q&A at the end if we've got time. And that's been working out really well lately. So I do appreciate all that engagement. This week's special guest is Stephanie Widener of Active Self-Protection. And as a part of tonight's live, a little bit later, we're going to be talking about issues we see in the training industry as a whole, both as trainers and as students. So if you guys I want you guys to be thinking about that as we're going through this live. And if you have any comments that or issues that you've seen or you've experienced through some of your training, either as a trainer or a student, be sure to drop those in the comments and be thinking about that as we move forward. We'll be able to talk about that later in more depth. But before we get in with Stephanie here, I do have a tidbit of the week, guys. The tidbit of the week is called Choices. And for those of us who have a defensive mindset, we've learned to pay attention to our surroundings and have, you know, some common sense about our actions so we don't put ourselves in bad situations, right? We've learned these things. And as instructors, we teach these things. Well, along those lines, I was recently in a public setting where people were everywhere and I had very limited options as to where I could position myself in the room. And it turned out that I ended up in the worst possible position I could be in, smack dab in the middle of several people on my left, several people on my right. My back was facing exactly where I would like to be able to see. And there was really nowhere for me to go in any direction if something were to happen, unless I wanted to jump on top of people. So these are things that are, you know, I think about in my day-to-day life. And so this is how my mind works now, right? And I know many of us with a defensive mindset, we think that way too. And several years ago, this would never have crossed my mind, though. And it's, you know, the running through scenarios that we talk about in developing a mindset that we talk about in training. But later on after this event, I had a conversation with someone. And, you know, knowing your audience is really important. And apparently I didn't realize my audience at the time. But we were having a conversation about how crowded the seating was for the event. And of course, I said something to the effect of, yeah, I didn't really like being in that position. If something would have gone down or something would have happened, many of us would have been trapped like sitting ducks in that scenario, in that, you know, environment. And surprisingly, the reply to me after I said this was, well, I don't know how you can think like that. I just don't know how you can think like that. Like it was horrible of me to think that way, that anything bad could ever happen. And I thought about that conversation later, and as easy as it would have been for me to be really judgmental of that person, I instead thought about how I used to be. And I realized I was the same way at one point in my life. Many years ago, I thought nothing bad would ever happen to me. And thinking about something bad happening just made me really uncomfortable. And so I just didn't go there and I didn't think about it until one day I was forced to think about it. And trust me, being in a very dangerous, helpless position is way more uncomfortable than thinking this stuff through in advance. So here's what I want to say about that. Maybe you're on one end of the spectrum or the other, but the fact that you are personally responsible for your own safety is something I believe you will either come to terms with on your own or something you may be forced to come to terms with someday. And I pray it's not the latter. But in this little conversation I had, it woke me up even more to the fact that the idea of personal responsibility and having a defensive mindset is a choice. that one needs to make for themselves. And I believe that a person should always prepare for the worst and always hope for the best. So in thinking about choices, here's what I encourage. Choose to consistently get the best training you possibly can get. Choose to take the responsibility of being a defender very seriously. Choose to know the law and your rights so you don't get yourself in even more trouble if you have to use your firearm in self-defense. And above all, choose to love others even when they don't make the same decisions you do. Not everyone is called to be a defender. If you are called, remember that others may need you someday. So prepare daily your mind, your body, and your soul for such a time, should it ever come. And while you're at it, don't forget to love others in the process. So there's my tidbit for the week, guys. I would get off my soapbox now on that. All right, so let me move on and introduce Stephanie Widener of Active Self-Protection. Stephanie's been involved in active self-protection in many different capacities since 2014, currently serving as the CEO and executive officer and John's general right-hand man. Because she is a follower of Jesus, she is passionate in her belief that innocent life has vast intrinsic value and is worthy of being fiercely defended. She enjoys having the opportunity to teach some of the skills necessary to that task around the country. She is particularly interested in defending vulnerable populations and issues important to women. So let's bring Stephanie Widener on. Hi, Steph.
Hi, Laura. That was
so glad to have you on.
Thank you. That was an incredible show of professionalism. I am in awe. I have had the technical issues during the live streams before, and those are challenging emotionally and difficult to recover from, and you look like nothing happened. So well done.
Oh wow. Well, my heart was racing there for a minute. Well, but
I believe it.
Well, you got to roll with the punches, right? What other choice do you have?
You don't have a choice.
Definitely. Well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. And I'm just really glad that I was able to figure out how to get back on here. And I saw my screen go black in the background whenever that was running. And I was like, wait, something's off. Something's not right. And there we go again, talking about trusting your gut, right? I should have started problem solving that long before that it went bad. But anyway, hindsight, right?
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about you tonight. And so could you, I know that my little intro, that was from the website, the Active Self-Protection website. Could you fill us in a little bit more about your journey to firearms? Because you were telling me the other day, you have quite a unique story.
Yeah, you know, in many ways, I'm not sure it's necessarily unique. I think the details, of course, are unique. But in talking to a lot of women around the country in particular, they seem to very often come to a defensive mindset in the defensive world after kind of something has happened in their own life. And that kind of gets them thinking. And that's what happened to me and my family. I didn't grow up in a family that was really anti-firearms, but they definitely weren't part of our life. And I married into a family that firearms were very much part of just a normal life, but not necessarily concealed carry or defending. They were hunting, they were sporting, they were for defending the farm and livestock and that sort of thing. And whenever the subject was broached about getting a handgun, for example, I didn't want anything to do with that. In my mind, handguns were designed exclusively to kill people. That was their point. There was no hunting with them. There was no sporting with them in my mind at that time. And that is really what they're designed to do. But sometimes that's, you know, as we know, that's exactly the tool that you need. But at the time, I really struggled with that. I believed a lot of the bringing a firearm into the home put my family at greater risk than anyone else, and I wasn't sure how to rectify that. So we just didn't do that. As time went on, we became foster parents. We were involved in the foster and adoptive system. And our very first placement was chosen for us because we were new parents and we lived in a very remote location. And no one really knew who we are at that time. We didn't have Google Maps or anything like that, but we had MapQuest. And so if you MapQuested our house, you didn't come anywhere close to where our house was. So we were pretty secure where we were. But they put a placement with us that they asked if we would consider being anonymous from the birth family, because the biological family had some pretty significant dysfunction. They were not at all happy about having the child removed, and they just thought it was best to separate us from them. So we didn't go to any of the meetings. We didn't go to any of the court hearings, and they redacted all of our information from the forms. That went well until it didn't, and they mailed our address to the family and didn't get it redacted at one point. So I am at home with five children under the age of 10, one of them being this beautiful, about 8 months old at the time, foster baby, and that I loved with all my heart. And I get a call from the social worker that she had kind of heard through some back channels that they were coming to get this baby, that that a shirt tail relative had just recently gotten out of prison, and they had talked about it, and they were not happy at all that we had the baby. So I'm trying to figure out what to do. And it was at that moment that I kind of realized that obviously I was willing to die to defend my children. That's not even, that doesn't even really make you a good parent. Like, that's the bare minimum, right? It's not special. But I realized at that moment that it didn't really do any good if that's what happened. I couldn't then continue to protect and defend my children if I was dead. So being willing to die was not enough. And I didn't have anything else other than a really good attitude that I would do whatever it took, but I had no skills. I had kind of a plan, and I was just going to do the best that I could. And that was really a challenging moment for me. And the story ends up very anticlimactically, thank God. But I ended up calling the police and letting them know what was going to happen. They arrived at the house about 25 minutes later, even though I called the emergency line and reported it as a kidnapping about to take place, but it routed to the wrong county, and we were on a county line. And I had also had another phone, and I called my husband, and I told him that what was happening, obviously. And we had had a plan that if anything ever happened, this child is now our son, but I said our son's biological family loves him. They don't want to hurt him. So rather than risk someone getting hurt, what if we let them have the baby and then we let the police sort it out later? That was our original plan if something like this ever happened. But when the moment came up, what I heard myself telling my husband was, they take this baby today over my dead body. And my husband was quiet for a moment, and then he said, yes, we were in agreement. That's what would happen. We defend this child with everything that we have. Hung up the phone, and he headed to our house. He ended up passing them on the way, because what had happened, they had pulled into our driveway. I don't know how they found our house to this day. They shouldn't have been able to. But they came down the road. We were at the end of a dirt road. They pulled into our driveway, sat for several minutes, and left. And that was the end of it. Other than I was really confronted with that reality that my kids needed someone to stand between them and a serious, credible threat. And I was not enough for the task. So I wish I could say, and then everything changed, but it still was a process from there. I didn't even know what one could do, how one could do it when you have, you know, five children under the age of 10, you're a stay-at-home, homeschooling mom, you're, you know, this, that was not my world at all. But it flipped switches, and I started that journey reading everything I could, learning everything I could, and a few years later, here we are.
Yeah, that is quite a journey, Stephanie. I mean, to go from that, and now you're the CEO of Active Self-Protection. So, like, how do you go from there to the CEO of Active Self-Protection?
I always tell people, like, the short answer is Jesus, because it doesn't make sense any other way. There, you know, like I said, a stay-at-home homeschooling mom, a bunch of kids. I had been out of the workforce completely for years and was not looking to get back into it at all. How does someone from the middle of the Middle West get hooked up with a pastor, professor, part-time instructor in Phoenix? It doesn't make sense. But what happened was, I was trying to learn all of this stuff, but I had kids all the time. And as a single income young family, we never had any extra time or money or anything like that. So I read everything I could on the internet. I was reading articles. I was reading all of these things. And I came across Active Self-Protection, the Facebook page. That's how it started. And it had probably about 30,000 followers, 50,000 followers when I started following. And I was just reading everything I could. I remember watching my first video on there and thinking, that isn't how I imagined violence happened. You know, I saw this moment, you know, this very typical scenario. Here is a video of a convenience store, and someone is walking in to buy milk after work or whatever, something we've done 100 times. And 10 seconds later, everything has changed, you know, mm-hmm. for everyone in that building. And that was amazing to me. I didn't know how to deal with that. So that was another thing I had to process, that whatever I had imagined violence to look like, it didn't look like that. So I had to start there, and I was reading everything I could and watching everything I could. And it was at this time that the Facebook page was starting to grow more than John could easily do on his own. So he put out an ask for volunteers, if anyone was willing to be able to help moderate the community, all of that. I guess on a whim, I contacted him, and it was basically with the idea to pay it forward. I was reading everything all the time anyway. I was in the comments all the time anyway, trying to learn as much as I could as a chance to repay some of what I had gotten. What could I do? So I said, you know, I don't know anything, but I can, you know, I can mom the comments. I can delete, you know, profanity, because we have a more professional Facebook presence, and whatever you need. Just tell me whatever grunt work you have and I can do it. And he was up for that. And it just kind of went from there. He eventually started encouraging me to become an instructor in my own right, and taking classes, taking instructor level classes, teaching along with him, and kind of mentoring and apprenticing there, and to eventually here as the business grew and as we grew. And that's how we got here, I guess.
I didn't know that story, Steph. That was the first time I ever heard it. That is really cool.
Yeah,
and I guess love that.
It makes sense. It makes no sense, but it worked, and it's been confirmed to me over and over again that this is where we're all supposed to be, and what we're supposed to be doing. It's good work. Mm-hmm. It's satisfying work, and I'm so grateful to be a part of it.
That's so good. Now, I know probably everyone watching knows what active self-protection is, but could you please just speak to that for a second for maybe somebody that doesn't know?
Of course. Active self-protection at its heart is a defensive training community based out of Phoenix, Arizona, although I myself am out of South Dakota, middle of nowhere. But if you have heard of it at all, it's probably because of our social media arm, which primarily is YouTube videos at this point. We take security camera footage of real life defensive encounters, or maybe badge cam, any type of you know, documentation of a security or of a defensive encounter, and then we analyze it for lessons learned. As we started doing that back in the early days, it didn't take too many videos to see the same principles and lessons coming up over and over and over again. And that seemed to be a clue that those were really, really important lessons. And very often they weren't the lessons that people were trying to teach in classes, or that, you know, it was kind of like what I was dealing with. This isn't what I thought violence was like. Yeah. So as we've compiled those lessons, that's, you know, we've got pages and pages of them now. But basically every single day we post a new defensive encounter 3 times a week, a badge cam. We also have a second YouTube channel called Active Self-Protection Extra that we do a lot of teaching on that channel, bits and pieces of classes that we teach, classes that we've taken, gear reviews, anything we really want to talk about. That's more of a training channel, and that's what we do.
That's so cool. What you do is so important. And I remember the first time I ever started watching the Active Self-Protection channel, and same thing. You think you know, but there's so much you don't know. And every scenario is different, but you're right. There are common veins through most of them, through many of them, that you can learn those lessons without having to be in a horrible encounter in order to learn the lesson.
Absolutely. We should. I mean, somebody else paid a really high price for those lessons that we can learn from the comfort of our living room. And it changed a lot of things for me personally. At the time that I was just learning, I had made an awful lot of wrong decisions about defending myself. I was carrying the wrong gun in the wrong way with the wrong everything. And I began to realize that at that point I was actually, it was kind of what I was most afraid of. I was at a greater risk to myself without actually having any defensive benefit. So at that time, I kind of stopped caring until I could sort that out. Once you start seeing how it really happens, and the fact that all of our resources, our time and our money and our attention and all of these things are very limited, you need to be spending them on the most important things. So I think that's why these principles that we're learning and seeing are so important. It helps you really spend those resources in a well-informed way.
Yeah, and we're going to talk more about training a little bit later in the live. I wanted to move over a little bit into the business aspect of things. So you went from a stay-at-home mom to now you're the CEO of Active Self-Protection. And when we talked the other day, you said a couple of lessons that you had learned, which I thought were so profound. They're so simple, guys, but so important. You said, find your people. Mm-hmm. And know your strengths and weaknesses. Could you elaborate on those just a little bit more?
Yeah. So kind of the starting leadership and the core leadership of Active Self-Protection is myself and John Correa, who is the founder, and my husband, Neil Widener, who's in the comments there commenting on how beautiful Adam was earlier. So these are my people. There's never a concern that someone doesn't have your back, that your team doesn't have your back, that they don't want what is for you. All of those things, you feel that security of a good team. But in addition to that, we all have very different strengths and weaknesses. And sometimes that can be the real challenge of things. For example, both John and my husband are the big thinkers. They're the entrepreneurs. They're big picture look, you know, miles and miles ahead. And I am a lot more detail oriented. I want to have everything planned out to the tiniest detail, and also a plan B and potentially a plan C if I could do that. Even at the times when that's been challenging for us, I've often been reminded that if it were left up to me, yes, I would like to have all the details planned out well and everything to be well organized. That's my role on the team. But also, if it was left up to only me, I would be completely mired in that, to the point that we would never do anything. We would never grow. We would never change. I'm not a huge risk taker. I'm much more conservative that way. And they are more comfortable with certain levels of risk. And I would never move if it weren't for the rest of my team. And if it weren't for me, the rest of my team would never stop. I don't know what would happen, honestly.
And I've heard John say that he doesn't know what would happen either. I mean, he talks, sings your praises everywhere he goes about how important you are to the team.
He's very kind. But I think there's something very special about the right people working together and recognizing that what the other people bring is valuable, that if you get too much of one thing or too much of one extreme or one side, it can really hold you back, and getting comfortable with that discomfort. For me, that means maybe moving before I'm ready, maybe moving before I have planned for every other. John in the comments, ready, fire, aim. That is 100%. Neil and John. But again, they've shown to be really good at managing risk and deciding how to take that. And so I've learned to trust that, and they trust and value when I ask to hold on, please, and let's talk about this. But without that balance and without that team, it would be a challenge. And the team becomes really important emotionally, I think, too, because long term in any industry, but particularly where we are, there's a lot of negativity on working through social media. And without the rest of the team knowing that, you know, kind of seeing your value in their eyes a little bit can be helpful, rather than hear, you know, 100,000 YouTube commenters tell you how stupid you are and everything about your parentage and whatever else they might want to say. You remember that the people that matter, that your team sees who you are and they see the best in you. And that has been instrumental in any type of longevity that I've had. I'm not sure I would still be anywhere here without Neil, without John, without the rest of the team having my back. There's not a person on the Active Self-Protection team that I don't feel supported and loved by them, and I feel about them like I feel about family. And that has been that's been the key in so many ways for me, finding that joy in what we're doing, because sometimes it's a really negative atmosphere outside of our little group.
Yeah, I'm sure there's always haters on social media, and the bigger you get, the more there are, it seems.
Yeah.
So, but having that mutual respect for each other, I think, is so important. Do you ever find it hard, though, being such good friends, but then being working in a business? Is that ever an issue? Or
You know, it's not. It's not a for me, at least. I guess maybe you'd have to ask.
Yeah.
But it hasn't been for me. And I think partially because of that respect level that I have for both Neil and John, it's I want to know what they want to do. I care about what they think. We have so much fun together, more fun, more laughs than we should ever have. And, you know, if somebody wanted to change something or do something differently than I was comfortable with, I look at that as kind of a challenge in a good way to get me out of my comfort zone a little bit. And I think, I think they're the same way, that they look at me as a good, I don't know, safety break or maybe something, something like that, that they would. So any type of what could potentially be irritation and other things by other people, I just don't feel it. I feel like it's a really good safety net in many ways. Yeah. It's the way we're meant to function together.
That's awesome. That's really, really cool. And I, you know, I think valuing those relationships is so important as well. So, you know, what I was going to say about the business aspect of things is it feels like business really to me, and I don't work necessarily on a big team or anything. I'm kind of a one-man band with my meat and potatoes business aside from Defenders USA. But to me, building relationships and managing expectations is a huge, huge part, not just of you and your customer, but of you interpersonally with your team as well. I think those two things, and you kind of touched on that, are really important. So let's move on though to the training industry. We're running out of time already, Steph. Let's move a little bit onto the training industry and instructors. Now, we talked earlier about something that was kind of on your heart about our responsibility as trainers, that these people come to us. Many of them never have even handled a gun before. Many are hesitant. Some are fearful. Many are coming, maybe they had gone through something traumatic, possibly, and being able to be with those people in a way that validates what they've gone through, and knowing where they are on the spectrum of emotion. And some people you have to push harder, and some you have to be have a little more finesse with. Those kinds of things are really important as a trainer. And there were a couple other things too that you brought up along that vein. Could you speak to that?
Sure. It's just been, you know, something that's been rolling around in my head for a long time. And that's that what we're doing in so many ways is teaching people, or I think what ideally we should be doing is teaching people about the intrinsic value that they have, that the reason that we can teach this and do this and that we, you know, are able to defend our lives with deadly force and all of these things, it is because as human beings, we're valuable. And so we need to be, that has to be part of what we're doing, part of all of it. And then we also need to be teaching them basically about, you know, boundaries, drawing healthy boundaries, learning how to, you know, is that as simple as just saying no and drawing lines in personal lives, all the way up to somebody's asking for something that, you know, that you're absolutely not willing to give, like, you know, your life or your body or your money or your family or whatever. So, but scale that however you want. It's still all boundaries and things like that. And so it's kind of been rolling around in my head as that we have to be the type of person that a student can trust with that. You know, very often, I think people are coming with some level of a difficult situation that they've been through, some trauma that they've been through. I don't know if that's typical across the industry. I know at Active Self Protection, we tend to have a lot of, this is my first class beyond a basic CCW class. They feel comfortable with that. So we hear a lot of stories that way. And very often they involve some level of, this really bad thing happened and now here I am. And I feel that there's a huge amount of responsibility that goes with that and trust that. And, you know, the responsibility to get it right as well. I think because of our social media presence and the fact that we kind of experience everything every trainer experiences, but kind of writ large because of our audience, it's not unusual for about weekly for me to get a communication from someone that, hey, I had this defensive encounter or potential defensive encounter happen. And when it happened, I could hear, your voice in my head. Generally, your voice means John's voice, of course, mm-hmm. but telling me what to do, telling me what not to do. And one in particular, you know, when the gun was pointed at my chest, I could hear the checklist of things that I needed to do in John's voice. And that hit me as this awesome level of responsibility to get it as right as you can, as often as you can, to always be open to learning and all of these things that makes an excellent instructor excellent. And I think too often we hear these stories of people getting in the industry that don't have that heart and don't have that mindset. You hear about, you know, professional standards and ethics being violated, boundaries being violated, just lack of professionalism, things like that. And I find it really bothersome because on one level, we're supposed to be teaching people to defend against exactly that, not the mm-hmm. ones that are the problem, the ones that are the perpetrators. Although, like we talked about, I suppose in any industry that allows you some level of power, which of course you and I both know that the firearms instructor at the front of the class shouldn't have any type of power differential there, but as a teacher, they do. But a lot of people are attracted to that might think that's here, I get to do this and I get to stand up there with a gun and I get to be powerful or whatever. And I just think so many problems spring from that. And if there was a way to, you know, kind of help students understand maybe what to look for and what is a good instructor? What is an excellent instructor? Who should you run from and when and why? I think they're big questions and I'm not even really sure how to answer them at any decent level yet.
Well, and a lot of people don't know what they don't know. So when they go into a class, they assume that whoever's in front of them has to, you know what they're talking about, is giving them good information. And knowing some of those red flags is hard in the beginning. And really, I would guess that you probably just need to go with your gut as much as possible. We talk about that in self-defense as well, as listening to your gut instinct. I think in a classroom environment, you should do that as well. And mm-hmm. and be willing to, if need be, leave the class if mm-hmm. you need to, if you don't feel comfortable with what's going on. I think a lot of instructors are, you know, is it that they have good intentions, but they don't know what they don't know as an instructor? Or is it that they're just more focused on themselves than they are their students? I think an instructor's focus is huge. And it's great that you have good intentions, but you do have to back that up with some knowledge. And it is our responsibility, guys, if we're instructors, to be learning ourselves constantly in mm-hmm. order to be a good instructor. And that will never end. We should always be learning.
You know, in anybody that comes from any other sort of background, you know, in our leadership here, we come from corporate background, we come from the ministerial background, from the education and professional educator background. And in all of those things, and military background, and all of those things, there are professional ethics and expectations and all of these things that you just know going in that you need to abide by at risk of losing your job. And I'm surprised that, you know, that people don't, you know, carry that over into their teaching profession here and understand some of the power differentials that they have over their students, understand some of the emotional dynamics that go on and how they might be overstepping boundaries even when they don't mean to, because like you say, intentions are great, but if you're actually, you know, kind of violating boundaries and making students uncomfortable because you don't know any better,
right,
that's there, you're still doing it, you know, whatever your intentions were. It's like you said, always be open to learning and growing and trying to find those boundaries and just not assume that it's okay.
Yeah. And guys, we're going to be going into the Q&A here soon. So if you have any questions for Stephanie, please put those in the comments. Steph, before we get into the Q&A, could you speak about the instructor certification program and the national conference? Because I know that's a huge part of what you guys offer.
Oh, yes, I would love to. Those are two things I love to talk about. The instructor certification thing is a program that I'm really proud of. You've had Carrie Dudenhofer on your show. She is one of the directors of that program. Christopher Bean is another director of that program, and they are just fantastic. I ASPIC, which is the shorthand for instructor certification, is something that we've been talking about and planning for years, and just we're never able to find the time or margin or ability to do it ourselves. But it's something that was kind of our baby and that we love and that we care for, and we were kind of reticent to give it up. And but Chris and Carrie make that so easy. They're such fantastic people, and I just love to sit and learn from the groups that come in. But the idea was basically teaching some of the stuff that you and I just talked about, understanding mm-hmm. that it's more than just, you know, how to hit an X at 10 yards, you know, that we need to understand as instructors that there are power differentials, there are boundaries, there are ethical and professional standards that have to be thought about. Also about, you know, adult learning modalities and, you know, constantly challenging and learning and growing. And another piece of it, it is community. A community element kind of gets built into it. And we knew that would be important. I think we didn't know how important that would be, because at ASP, we've always had that community kind of internally as a company. And so not realizing how many people didn't have it. And then we're able to find it in the cohort groups. That's been a really big component. So just the idea to help instructors become the kind of instructors that are teaching students what they need to hear in a safe way and always continually learning and growing, challenging themselves, is important. And I love being part of that. I just love it. The National Conference is one of my favorite things. It is, we have the theme of adoption and foster care just kind of woven throughout our entire company. I could just give story after story. And so what the conference is it's 100% a fundraiser for a place called the Flint Hills Foster Teen Camps. What that is it's a summer camp in Kansas. And what they do is they provide a summer camp to abused and abandoned foster teens. And also they have a program called Homes of Hope that they use to help children when they turn 18 and they are now out of the foster care system. They are supposed to, you know, basically be homeless at that point. You know, you're not a child anymore. Now you move on to adulthood and you're not in the system anymore. So they help with some training there. They have some on-site housing. They help with budgeting and housekeeping and job interviewing, all of that sort of thing. So the conference is an event that 100% benefits that. The attendees each donate $600 directly to the camp to attend this three-day conference-style training event. We've got four ranges going, several classrooms going for 3 days, with some of the best instructors in the industry. And all the instructors have donated all of their time and talent. They're supposed to have all of their expenses covered. Very often they don't even submit those. It's just something that everybody gives to help raise money for these kids. And last year we raised just at $100,000. And I just love it. I think as a training event on its own, it's pretty stellar, outstanding. But when you take in the entirety of it, it's a pretty special event that you almost have to experience to really understand. But those are two of my favorite things.
That would take a lot of your organizing superpowers, I imagine.
It's way more than I can do on my own. And so I have several people that I couldn't do without. Katie Johnson is one of them, out of Illinois. She's an instructor in her own right. Shelley Hill from The Complete Combatant helps. Carrie Dudenhofer has been helping quite a bit. I couldn't do it without them anymore. It's just gotten to be too big, which is amazing. And my organizational skills have been surpassed.
That's so cool. But we're starting cohort 6 here pretty soon with the instructor certification program, and I've never gone through it. So I'm really looking forward to it. I think I kind of know what to expect, but I have a feeling I don't really have a clue. And I'm just going to roll with it and take whatever comes and do the best I can. So really, really looking forward to that. That's so cool.
Good. I am too. I miss the groups each week. We just graduated one, and I'm kind of missing the camaraderie each week from that group. Aww. So I'm excited to have another one.
That's so neat. Well, we're going to wrap up here soon, guys. So if you have any questions, put those in the comments. In the meantime, Steph, I have one more question for you, and it kind of is putting you on the spot a little bit, but I don't think it'll be that big of a deal for you. What is something that you've changed your mind about in the past year in training, business, or life?
Oh, in the last year, that's a great question, because that's something we are talking about in our Facebook group right now. The Ask Dry Fryer Challenge is something that a practice that you had, and that you were confronted with the evidence of that practice and how, you know, how you changed from there. And let's see.
Well, I guess it doesn't have to be over the last year.
Yeah, if you make it not over the last year, that helps. Although that's interesting, as I'm getting challenged. What have I done over the last year that I've changed? That's an interesting question, but it might take me a little long to come up with something.
We can come back to it.
Well, I can answer the question if we can go back farther than that.
Okay.
So, for example, what we talked about in the video earlier in the interview, when I was talking about watching those videos, one of the things that I was doing was carrying a gun in a purse, but I also was carrying it chamber empty, not just chamber empty, but magazine out of the gun and locked in a compartment in my purse. Like, wow. I had several little kids, and my terror was one of my children being harmed. So yeah. I had a little tiny key to get into that purse and get the gun out of the purse. And I guess somehow in my fantasy, I was going to do this, load the gun, rack the slide, and somehow. And I remember thinking and rationalizing this in that, well, that's, you know, it's not going to help in every situation, but it might help in some. And then when I started watching the active self-protection videos, I thought, this is actually a liability to me and not a benefit. It actually provides zero benefit to me, and increase, you know, I don't have any risk of being hurt by my own gun carrying it if I'm not carrying one, but I am. So I'm carrying a gun with no upside and the potential for a downside. So yeah. I stopped carrying at that point and started to figure out. And then I started carrying in a holster with the chamber empty. And then I was confronted with the evidence there that also was not going to be appropriate. And so I figured out how to do that and how to start doing that. So it's that has been a lot of what has changed professionally over the years. That and then, you know, you have different things that something, you know, we've all were taught, you know, you have your head down, crouch and be really tough and all of that. And, you know, then that went by the wayside. Now we're just super relaxed and chill. But as you get confronted with the evidence and somebody all of a sudden doing something that you were told didn't work, you know,
right.
You have to be willing to reevaluate it, always learning and always growing.
Yeah. And not everybody is as open-minded to change. And so everyone is on like I talked about in the tidbit, we're all on a spectrum here. We're all in a different place and along the journey. And so we have to respect that about people. And so let's see here. Yeah. Yeah. A couple questions here. So Chris wants to know, what is the next big training goals for Stephanie, and what are you going to be doing in 2023?
The next training goal, we are having an ASP staff training here next fall. And we're having Gabe White come to our class. And the last Gabe White class that I was in, I took a seat at the last minute and I was not well practiced and prepared, unfortunately. And I performed okay, like fine. And I was proud of that, but I wanted to have better scores at the end. I wanted to, so my goal is to do much better in that class. And so we're gonna have it on my home turf. We're like gonna have it in my back.
Oh man, that's gonna be so much fun. I have seen tons of videos of him, and he is, wow, he's remarkable to watch. And he's a great teacher too.
He really is. He has, I think he's got it down to a script and a science, but beyond teaching really good things, he really is kind of the epitome of heart and passion and why I do what I do and this is why. And you can't hardly attend that class and not kind of feel like the football player in the locker room at halftime, and the coach is kind of going through, this is why we do it. And he's so good. So yeah, it's a great class. So that's one of my bigger goals for the next year to perform better in that class. I haven't put a name on it as far as like what pin I would like to get. I probably need to. I'm probably going to get yelled at.
I want to be specific about your goals.
Right? I know. So I need to, you know, make that SMART goal or whatever.
Well, Laura has a question here. She wants to know how you ended up choosing the Flint Hills Teen Camp.
Great question. So we were teaching around the country, and they have a shooting range at the turbo pins for everybody. Maybe Chris. we were teaching around the country, and they have a shooting range and company at the Flint Hills Foster Teen Camps. They invited us to come in and teach. So we came and we taught our 3-day evidence state pistol there. In doing that, we got to know the people that run the camp, because we have it right there at the camp. We got to hear about their mission, got to hear about what they were doing. And a few years previous, we had done something similar to it, not as a fundraising venture, but kind of a conference style event in Phoenix before that. And because I'm not in Phoenix and I'm kind of the organizer or whatever, it was a challenge to do. We kind of got away from it. And so when we were back teaching this class, as they were telling us about the work that they did and who they were and the impact, we just sat and looked at each other and we said, this is what we need to do. This is where we need to do it. And it's a beautiful facility. It is, it's really perfect for what we need to do. So that's where we are. There's something magical.
I love hearing all these great stories about things just working out the way they're supposed to. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things. There's something almost sacred or magical about that space there. I'm not, not to get too out there, but bringing hurting people to that, or hurting kids to that particular area, seems to do miracles.
Mm. Wow. Well, a little icebreaker here to change the mood. Somebody, I don't know, a Facebook user wants to know, who is your favorite employee and why is it Mike Williver? I wonder
who that could be. Yeah, Mike does our podcast for us, which is a really cool thing that we started over the last year-ish, where we get a chance to tell stories of people that were in real life defensive encounters, whereas we kind of analyze it from third person on the video. In the podcast, he gets to talk to them about what happened and what were they thinking and why were they doing that. So that's a pretty fantastic show. If I'm going to be forced to choose someone at ASP, it's going to have to be my husband. I have to climb in bed with him in a few hours. So.
Yeah, go to the Active Self-Protection podcast. Isn't that what it's called?
Yes.
That Mike hosts? Yeah.
Yes. Everywhere you find podcasts, you will find the Active Self-Protection podcast.
Oh, we got another question. And it's great because
it's that longer format talking. Oh, that's a great question.
Ross wants to know, what advice would you give yourself if you could go back when you started working at ASP?
Wow, that's a really great question. I think it's kind of hard, because what I want to say is I would trust the people that I'm working with now sooner and believe the things that they told me about myself sooner, which helped me see who I was meant to be and have the confidence to do what I do now. But I don't know how do you do that sooner? How do you trust people sooner? How do you believe sooner without having that evidence build incrementally?
Yeah, but Stephanie, sometimes the process of learning that is even more important than getting from A to Z, right?
Yeah. So
that's where the magic happens.
So I think that would be what I wish would have happened. I wish I would have said, yes, you're right. Let me go to these classes. Let me take these leads. Let me take these pieces and trust that I can do them. Because I fought a lot of that for a long time. So that, I guess that would be the answer to the question. Trust sooner, but I'm not sure that's actually possible.
Trust sooner. Yeah. You know, I need to hear those words too. part of being a great shooter is being able to trust your skills and your abilities and believing in yourself that you can do it. And I'm telling you what, guys, if you have doubt in yourself, in your abilities, in your own judgment, all of that will come out through your shooting. It will.
It really will. I think, like, to a level, you can kind of fake it, like through that, you know, a mid-range, that even high average, you can kind of fake it until or fake confidence and it doesn't affect you or whatever. But until you are pushing and now you're trying to do things and getting outside that comfort zone, that's a real challenge. That has been what I have been working on for, it's been probably 2 years now, that whole idea of trust when you're shooting. Chris, I knew I was going to hear about that. Yeah. I definitely have people that I've been talking to, Chris being one, that you have to learn to trust. And again, how do you trust when you don't trust? How do you trust sooner? Because it takes, time and history to trust, and you don't have time and history without time and things happening. So,
sooner and how. You're not the only one. Just know that you're not the only one. There's many people that struggle with that. Even if they tell you they don't, they're lying.
Right.
Yeah. That's what I love about you, is that you're really honest about it. And, I think people can really resonate with that, and they pick up on authentic people, just real people. And that's why I love having you on here. We are at the end of the hour, close to. So I just want to thank you so, so much for coming on tonight. You've been an absolute pleasure to have on. Do you have any parting comments before we wrap this up tonight, Steph?
If I could reiterate your authenticity comment about the people love authenticity, I think that was a big part of my process and journey was we all hear the words, be yourself, just be yourself, just be yourself. And it took me, it was John kind of hitting me upside the head with the comment, you're not being yourself, you're being some sort of professional version of yourself. Mm-hmm. And I went, what you mean? You want like the unvarnished, the joking, I said, yes, I want my friend doing this. I want you doing it. And that has been a game changer. Being authentically me to the world has been a game changer. And it hasn't always been easy, but I would really encourage people to find that place, because it's not an easy place, particularly at first, but it's a good place to be. You start to find your people when you are yourself. And there's no substitute for your people.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think maybe that's why I started on another level, maybe started doing these live streams, is because it forces me to really be as authentic as I can, be myself, be real, because I felt so much of that was lacking in a lot of things that I saw. And I feel like we need more of that. So I just thought, well, if you're going to complain about it, why don't you do something about it, right?
I love it. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for that parting comment, Stephanie. You've been such a pleasure to have on. I've enjoyed every minute of it.